Homestyle Green, episode 222. Today on the show, building better homes with Third Little Pig. G'day and welcome back to Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Simon Wansborough is someone who wants to build better homes, and he does that through his company Third Little Pig in Christchurch, New Zealand. So here is that chat with Simon talking about how he got into building and also how he's got into a situation now where he's a little bit more choosy about the clients that he works with.
Hey, well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for your time. Appreciate coming on the show, Simon.
No problem.
Let's start out by talking about how you got into building. Now, you know, we've known each other, unlike a lot of my guests, we've known each other since before you got into building and sort of did a little bit of outdoor kind of activity. So I know a bit of the story, but what took you down the path of building? Because I could have seen you doing a whole bunch of other stuff.
So, you know, as you alluded to, I was doing outdoor recreation type stuff and working on ski fields and things like that. And then when kids started to come along, I was like, well, you know, this lifestyle is great, but I'm away from home pretty much all the time and wanted to do something that didn't mean that. And thought about a few things, thought about doing, you know, going to uni and doing some kind of business degree or something, or the other option that I was quite keen on was building. I'd already always done a bit. My dad was into a lot of DIY stuff, and I'd worked as a labourer on some building sites and things, so ended up following that path. And went to Polytech, did a pre-trade course, and right back then, you know, kind of energy efficiency and looking after the environment and all that kind of thing was something that I was interested in. So when I did my apprenticeship, I actually sort of hunted out a company which was, yeah, it was pretty early in New Zealand for that kind of stuff. But I hunted out a company that was trying to do that and did my apprenticeship with them, which was interesting.
So there was back then there was a couple of different approach or different a few different ways of getting into building, right? You could go and do a block course, or you could sort of spread out your training over a period of time.
Yeah, so the apprenticeship scheme was as you say a bit different then, and it was sort of split into two parts. It was split into the theory and the practical, whereas now they're more kind of joined. There's still a theory element, but you can't sign off any of the theory until you've also signed off the practical, whereas in my time they were sort of two completely different sign-offs. Everyone still did the practical side of things, and then with the theory there was the option to do a pre-trade course for 9 months and do all the theory, or to, you know, do the theory either in your own time or block courses or, you know, evening classes and stuff. And I decided, because I had little kids around, that trying to do theory and stuff in my own time was going to be a struggle. So decided to do the pre-trade and just get all that stuff out of the way in one hit.
And how did you find it in general? Because like I say, it was kind of like a second or even third career. And you'd had your, in your 30s, and I imagine that a bunch of the others were 18-year-olds. How did you find it as a more mature age student?
It was definitely frustrating at times, because, you know, the way the system was working was, you know, there was no such thing as pass or fail. It was competent or not yet competent. And so, you know, you'd learn stuff in class and then you would, you know, you'd have a test on it. So I'd go home and I'd study for the test, and I'd go and sit the test. And I generally did really well in those tests. Whereas some of the younger students were kind of, you know, they would go, well, you know, once we've done the test, then the tutor goes through the answers, and if we haven't passed, then we get to sit it again. So they would, you know, they would not bother studying. They would sit there for the test and do nothing, and then the tutor would run through the answers, which they would then write down, and then they would, you know, resit the test the next day and fill in the blanks from the answers that they'd written down, which to me wasn't, you know, a really good way to prove their knowledge. So I found that pretty frustrating. Our tutor was really good because there was, even at Polytech, there was the theory and there was the practical part. So we did stuff in the workshop, you know, learning hand tools and all those kind of things, and also building an actual house, which was, you know, really good thing to go through. And our tutor was really good at kind of saying to the few of us in the class who were sort of a bit more onto it with the theory, just, you know, get it done as quick as you can and then get out in the workshop and make stuff. So that worked pretty well. It would take me, you know, an hour or hour and a half to do what everyone else would do in the whole morning, and then shoot into the workshop and make shelves and stuff for home. So yeah, it was
nice.
It was fun.
What did you find the hardest in doing, in having that transition to becoming a builder?
Do you mean from a kind of personal point of view or a work?
In terms of the training and the course and I guess lifestyle as well.
I suppose from a course point of view, you know, the hardest part was kind of, I could have done that in 3 months rather than 9 months. So at times it felt like a bit of a waste of time. But, you know, at the end of the 9 months it was all done and I didn't have to worry about it anymore. So it was probably worth the pain. Other than that, I really enjoyed the process. I think it was a good process because you – you know, and I see it with my own apprentices now. You try and avoid it, but, you know, a lot of the time it's just the way it is. You know, someone has to dig the hole, someone has to sweep the floor, someone has to do all that kind of stuff, and that generally falls on the apprentice. Whereas doing the pre-trade course and building the house, you kind of got a really good understanding of the whole process really quickly, rather than, I think, if you're just on site as an apprentice, it takes longer before you've covered off everything.
And you mentioned you were always interested in the environmental side, energy efficiency, that sort of thing, and that's no surprise, having worked a lot in the outdoors and being conscious of that or prior. But was there any of that discussed during the training?
No, and I know for a fact it's still not, which is you know, again, a pretty frustrating thing. Yeah, it's like I look through my apprentices' books and stuff that they have for learning their theory and things, and there's not really anything other than building code stuff. So that's pretty frustrating.
Now you haven't done, you went straight into working with fairly small bespoke builders, didn't you? You haven't done time at a large volume builder?
No, I haven't. It's something that never interested me, doing that kind of work. I was really lucky actually, because the company that I did my apprenticeship with was working on those types of project a lot of the time, not all of the time. And then I went straight from that into working alongside Jared, who I'd done my apprenticeship with. We just went straight into kind of a partnership kind of arrangement with the places that we were building. And then really quickly went on from there to having my own business and starting to do my own thing. So,
and what was the motivation for that?
For going out on my own, you mean?
Yeah.
I think that was one of the things that drew me to building rather than any other option, was the ability to be your own boss and to have that flexibility around, you know, work hours and that kind of stuff. You know, it doesn't, you know, a lot of people go, oh, you know, you spend your day driving around drinking coffee, which, you know, is not the way it is in reality. But, you know, I have the flexibility to
work the hours that I want to. If I want to take an afternoon off to go to, you know, see kids at school doing athletics or whatever, then I can. It may mean that I have to get up early the next morning, or it may mean that I work in the evening to get what I didn't do done during that time. But yeah, I have that flexibility, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it seems to me that a lot of successful builders don't actually spend a great deal of time or a number of years on the tools, because you sort of train and you build for a while, and then if you get a decent name for yourself, then you end up managing your own team, and then you're managing a company.
Yeah, and I think different people deal with it in different ways. I know people who have the, you know, similar kind of size of company to myself, who you know, they have a lot of help from other people, whether it's, you know, contracting it out or people in the office doing a lot of the office stuff because they want to be on site all the time. I think that I'm better at the project management type stuff than I am as a builder, to be honest. And so, you know, I see that, you know, my role is doing what I'm good at, which is that project management stuff, and making sure that I employ foremen and stuff who are really, really good at the building side of things.
So a matter of playing to your strengths.
Yeah. Whereas I think, you know, there's other builders who you know, they're more into the actual building. Now, don't get me wrong, I really enjoy building. But now I suppose I enjoy doing the bits that I enjoy and cannot do the bits I don't enjoy. Which is a good place to be.
So from the outset of the Third Little Pig, was that the original name when you set up your own company?
No, so originally it was just Simon Wansborough Builder, and that was operating as a sole trader, and when you know, when we got a little bit bigger, started doing bigger jobs and stuff, and decided it was time to, you know, become a company rather than a sole trader, that's when we switched names.
And how did you come up with a name?
A lot of brainstorming. I actually came up with Third Little Pig quite quickly. Building better homes was what we were wanting to do, what we were wanting to focus on. And so I kind of had that sort of tagline, building better homes, in mind the whole way along, and was trying to think of names to go with that. And can't really remember exactly how Third Little Pig popped into my head, but it was kind of like, you know, which pig built the best house. And so then that kind of sat off in the background for a while, because I wasn't, sure how that would get taken. I'd talk to some people and they'd say, yeah, that's great. And other people would go, are people going to take you seriously? And kept trying to think of other names. And then in the end, I just kept liking Third Little Pig, so went with it. And it's been really good because people recognize it and remember it.
And your houses are wolf-proof now.
Yeah, exactly. yeah.
Not many other people can say that.
No, that's right. Especially in New Zealand, it's a big concern making sure you're
wolves. Right. Yeah, not very well known for our wolves.
No,
but yeah, our wolves and our issues come in different forms, I think, which you address quite a lot, and I think it works quite well because it's not as in your face, but it's definitely there. And I think you're right; people are getting to know the brand now, getting to know the company, and appreciate that value. Passive houses are a big part of what you do now. When did you first hear about passive house?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I'm not actually sure, to be honest. It was probably around 2 years after the Christchurch earthquakes, I think. I was definitely interested in that kind of thing, and was, you know, doing research and talking to other people, and you know, every time I saw some kind of, you know, seminar or something about along those lines, I would go along, and it's through that process that Passive House popped up. So started researching that and thought that really liked the whole system, really, mm-hmm. Of PHPP and how it all works.
Because you didn't go down the Homestar route or look at any other rating tools or any other systems for formalizing what you wanted to achieve with energy efficiency?
I did, and yeah, I mean, it's something we have done is Homestar stuff. I find Homestar a little bit tricky in the fact that I feel that the majority of the public perceive it as an energy rating system. Mm. Which, you know, partly it is, but it's not all about that. You know, there's a lot of good stuff about it, and you know, we could build a 7-star or even a 6-star home, which performance wise is way better than a 10-star home. That's why I think I prefer this sort of Passive House line of things, because I think it's more about what the majority of people are actually wanting when they say I want a warm, dry, healthy home.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you generally operate now? Because you're not exclusively Passive House, are you? You sort of do a bit of a range of stuff.
Yeah. So we're not exclusively Passive House, but all our buildings are way better than the building code.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all airtight. They all have mechanical heat recovery systems, ventilation systems. They all have, you know, better windows, whether they're timber or PVC. And yeah, all super insulated, all those kind of things. We do. So, you know, all along, you know, everything we do gets modelled in PHPP so that we know how it's going to perform before we build it. They're just not all necessarily certified passive houses.
Yeah. And is that something you have to convince your clients of, or do they come to you because that's what you're known for now?
A lot of them come to us either directly or through architects or, you know, whatever. Because they know that's what we do, and yeah, we're at the point now where we won't do anything else. If someone comes to me with plans for a you know, building code house, I just say, sorry, we're not the company to do that for you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, that means they just go off and find someone who will do that for them. And other times they start asking questions, and then, you know, often it's pretty easy to convince them that they can do things better.
So given that you're not exclusively certified Passive House, but you do PHP modelling, you mentioned good ventilation, so balanced heat recovery ventilation systems, where's the sort of threshold of what you'd be comfortable in doing? Would you build anything now, for example, that didn't have air tightness as part of the design?
No, I wouldn't. Different people have different views on air tightness, mm-hmm. but I think it's crucial, but not both from a air tightness and moisture management point of view. Yeah. In fact, we had a client a couple of years ago who, you know, they came to us because they knew what we did. They weren't after a passive house. They were just after a house that was going to perform really well. And we priced it out, and it was, you know, as often as the case, it was too expensive. So we started looking for ways to reduce cost. And the homeowner said, "Oh, actually, we've been thinking about it, and we think we'll get rid of the air tightness because we're not convinced about that and the cost of it." And I just said, "Well, that's okay. You know, if you want to remove the air tightness, that's fine. But you'll need to find someone else to build the house with."
Right.
And they were like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yeah, really." And they're like, "You're that serious about the importance of it?" And I said, "Yes. There's lots of other ways we can reduce cost in this house before we start looking at removing the air tightness." And they went, "Oh, okay. We're keeping the air tightness. What else can we do?"
Right.
And I think, you know, if you've got that stance, people take it. You know, people take it seriously. If you just, I think, as a builder, if you just go, "Oh, okay. If you don't want it, well, fine. We won't do it." It's kind of, it's. You're not driving people where I believe I should be driving them, and if people realise you're that serious about it, then they generally listen.
Well, I think it sends a really strong message, because up to that point they might have thought you're just trying to sell them something, but then if you're willing to walk away from it because you believe in it, they would naturally think, well, okay, maybe this does mean something, and maybe it is that important. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think you're right there that, you know, it is a very good indication that you're not just trying to make an extra margin on another product.
Yeah. You've worked with a few different systems, different building materials. I think you've done some sit panel constructions or some prefabricated systems. Have you got a favorite?
I really like the concept of SIPS panels, and I really, I think you can achieve some really good performance with them. However, in my experience, the jobs that we've done and the jobs that we've priced that way is it's not the most cost-effective way. So at the moment, I'm still always looking at different options and seeing what's happening with pricing of different products and stuff. But at the moment, a timber frame structure with an airtight wrap and service cavity, which is insulated as well, is the most cost-effective way to build. And you know, maybe depending on the design, obviously, and everything, that the performance isn't quite what it would be if the same house was done in a decent SIPS panel, but it's right up there, and the cost is less. And I think one of the reasons for that is from the whole, not just from the builder, but from the whole build process, doing it the way that we do it is what all the subbies and everything are all used to. You know, it's just it's a normal house for them. We've just added some extra steps to it. Whereas you know, you start looking at these different products, and then they start getting a bit scared and they don't know it, so then they go, "How long is it going to take?" And then they increase their labor allowance for it, and all that. So
you've mentioned price a few times. It's probably how long this piece of string, but is there a normal price premium that you expect to have to talk to someone about with things like adding an airtightness layer, adding a high performance ventilation system? What sort of prices are we talking about?
I don't like to talk about comparison, because it's just, as you say, it's how long is a piece of string. It completely depends on the design. It completely depends on the size. It completely depends on a whole lot of stuff. But what I do talk to clients about a lot is making compromises on other stuff to bring that cost down to more of a level that is equal to what a building code house would be. So we talk a lot about, you know, interior fixtures and fittings and stuff. You can, you know, you've got one chance to get the structure of the house right. You get the windows right, get the air tightness right, get the insulation right. Because you're not going to change those things at a later date. Whereas your floor coverings, your kitchen, your door hardware, your bathroom fittings, all those kind of things, you can change later. And people do, you know. It's like you've got a house that's 15 years old, someone new moves into it. What's the first thing that most of them do? It's like, oh, we'll redo the kitchen. You know? It's like that happens all of the time. So, you know, it's like we can do a kitchen, you know, for $7,000 or $8,000, which is has very little difference to the kitchen that they go and get for $30,000. You know, it's a massive difference. There's your air tightness and your ventilation system, right there. So, and also we do a lot around windows and exterior windows and doors. Looking at sizes and looking at the configurations and stuff of those to help bring the cost down a lot as well.
Yeah. So what you're talking about there, and you've alluded to already, is that you get involved in the design process quite a lot. So is that unique, first of all, for builders to be as involved as you are in that design process? And how does that work in terms of that relationship? Like, obviously, you don't get just given a plan from an architect and say, here it is, go and build it.
Yeah, I don't think it's unique, but you're right, it doesn't happen very often. And I think it's, I think it's the best way to build a house. And a lot of the efficiency that we can find is looking at detailing and looking at engineering and looking at all those different things right from the start and going, what's the simplest way to do this? A huge amount of a builder's labor. So if you can make something easy to build rather than hard to build, then you're already on a win because you're reducing the amount of labor that you're building. I've got a meeting this afternoon with an architect and an engineer, which we're looking at some detailing and stuff. And I'm looking at the plans of a particular part of this build and going, that's really, really complicated. And this, if we did it like this, we've got this exactly the same result, but it's going to take a third of the time to build. Not the whole house, but as in that part of the house, it's going to be way quicker to build. So having those conversations right at the start while plans are still being done is, to me, really, really important.
Is that sometimes a tricky conversation because you're basically critiquing an architect's art and their creation? Do they get concerned and they want to keep the lines that they've drawn?
Well, in this particular case, it's not going to make any difference at all to what it looks like. It's just going to be how it's constructed. But yes, there are situations where where a suggestion that I make is going to change the look of the place. But I feel I shouldn't be scared about that. It's like if the architect and their client don't want to take my suggestion, that's fine. But at least I've made the suggestion. There's times where I'll say, you're probably not going to like this, but this is what I think we should do. Whether it's from a performance point of view or whether it's from a buildability point of view or whether it's from a cost point of view or whatever, I just say this is what I think. If explain why and explain what the benefit is. A lot of the times, a huge amount of the time, it's just that they haven't thought about it like that. And when they think about it like that, they go, oh, yeah, you're right. That's a really good idea. And there's other times where an architect will go, no, I'm not happy with what that's going to look like. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But at least we've talked about it.
Mm-hmm. And how do you facilitate that situation to actually happen? Because it does, like I said, it doesn't always happen. The architect sort of works away and finalizes their plans, gets detailed construction drawings, and then sends it off to either tender or to a QS to get priced. How do you get involved early on?
It depends on how the client has come to us. If the client has come directly to us before they've kind of engaged an architect, then it's pretty easy because we can help them choose an architect and we can make that kind of connection right from the start. If it's the other way, if they've already been to an architect, then it can be a bit tricky. But I think that the architects that are working in that space are probably more aware a lot of the time as to how important that part of the process is.
Mm.
You know, especially when you're looking at air tightness and that kind of stuff. You know, there's you know, if it's a rectangular box, then air tightness is easy. But if it's a more complicated structure, then you really need to think about the buildability of it. And I think that architects and stuff who are doing that are aware of that, probably because they've done a build where it's, you know, where they've designed it and then it's gone to be built, and the builders are going, this is almost impossible to actually do this, you know. And so they've learned, well, okay, we need to involve the builder earlier on to make sure that we're getting these details right.
You mentioned quite a lot, but are there any final tips or major points that you would give as advice for someone embarking on a project, either as a client about to start building their own house, or maybe as another building professional about to kick off a project? What would be your top tips?
I think probably the top tip is, and I have already alluded to it, but just, you know, if you think that this stuff is important, just stick up for that. You know, mm-hmm. Don't back down on what you believe is right. Just to keep the job. You know? I think the more that professionals, whether it's architects or builders or you know, whatever, are sticking to their guns and going, this is how we should build, then the better off everyone's going to be.
Nice.
And yeah, from advice to builders' point of view is, yeah, make sure you're involved right at the start. Make sure you're helping people make decisions that are not going to end up with a massive budget blowout when you finish pricing it.
Yeah. Where do you operate, Soap? Where's the extent of your current projects?
So majority of our work is around Christchurch or Greater Christchurch. So, you know, from sort of Amberley to Rolleston, and including, you know, Diamond Harbour and around the Littleton Bays and stuff there. Mm-hmm. We've done a project up at Castle Hill Village. And also, but you know, I spend a lot of my time down Mackenzie District, Fairlie Way. So we've done a few projects down here as well.
And where's the best place for people to get in touch?
Our website, thirdlittlepig.co.nz. It's got our contact details and stuff in there. So
cool. And you put a few posts up on social media occasionally.
Yeah, Facebook, Third Little Pig Construction on Facebook. On there as well. So
good to see a couple of those live blow door tests and stunning scenery of those building sites.
Yeah, I get super excited when we get a good blow door result. So
good, awesome. Yeah. Hey, well, thank you very much for your time and for your input today. So I really appreciate it. And it's definitely exciting seeing that journey from a distance. And I look forward to seeing more Third Little Pig houses popping up around the place.
Thank you, Matt.
And that was Simon Wansborough of Third Little Pig in Christchurch. And also, as he mentioned, he does do work down further in the South Island as well. Love to get your thoughts on this show and others. You can always contact me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. Love to hear your thoughts, feedback, comments or questions. And we're also on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn as well. You can find me on LinkedIn, post and occasionally write some articles up on there as well. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live.